This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Ultimate HA7 Joint Formula from Purity Products. Ultimate HA7 features the joint-boosting benefits of hyaluronic acid. HA works like a shock absorber, helping to cushion and soothe your joints. Plus, this HA also hydrates your skin. It's powerful support for your joints, cartilage, skin, and connective tissues. So call 800-983-1154 and get a full-size bottle of HA7 for only $9. And you also get free shipping. Call now to claim your $9 trial bottle of HA7 with free shipping. 1-800-983-1154. These move fast, so call now. 1-800-983-1154. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I think a very topical Intelligent Medicine Podcast because, we're in the wake of a pronouncement by eminent nutritionists and scientists who put together something called the Eat Lancet Report. And the report calls for drastic reductions in our consumption of meat, both to improve human health, but also to save the planet from environmental devastation. Today we're going to talk to, actually she's a familiar guest because we've talked to her in the past about her books. She's Nicolette Hahn Nyman. She's author of Defending Beef. Previous to that, she also wrote a book called The Righteous Pork Chop. She's a rancher, environmental attorney, and writer. And full disclosure here, she is married to Bill Nyman of Nyman Ranch, which makes some very, very high-quality meat products. By the way, Nicolette, I have some of your husband's horiso in the fridge. I'm anxious.
Great.
It's one of my perennial favorites because it's clean and natural. So, Nicolette, you know, let's take a look at this Eat Lancet report, because just if I can sum it up, what they're saying here is that the Earth cannot sustain meat production. We have a rapidly expanding population. Meat production is causing environmental devastation worldwide. It's contributing to global warming. And oh, by the way, it's not so good for us to be eating meat because meat's unhealthy. It's bad for you. And we should really be concentrating on a, quote, plant-based diet with minimal amounts of meat. And the program that they lay out really has very, very scanty amounts of animal protein. And there's been a big blowback on this subject, including from you. So what say you, yes, Nicolette?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great summary of the report. And there certainly is this idea kind of out there, you know, in the zeitgeist right now that this is the way things should be heading. And I mean, from the environmental side of it, I would say we can't sustain not having the animals in the food system. I've been working on this issue as an environmental activist and starting as an environmental lawyer on this question for about 20 years now. And the more I've learned, the more I've come to appreciate the absolutely essential role that animals play in ecologically optimal food systems. So if you were to just wave a magic wand and take all the animals out of the food system, I think that would be the first step towards environmental collapse. It's not desirable, and it is certainly not the direction, you know, that we should be heading in.
And you yourself were once a vegetarian, even a vegan. And
never a vegan.
Never quite a vegan, but a vegetarian.
Definitely not.
Mostly eating, yes, you know, some alternative forms of, perhaps dairy and eggs, but not a lot of meat. You since modified your dietary regimen. But, you know, have you noticed vegans have a certain amount of moral fervor? You know, sometimes you're called upon to have lively discussions with vegetarians, to put it mildly, in debate format. And the hate and vituperation that they sometimes put on you is way over the top.
Yeah, well, I've been the subject of a lot of internet trolling. That's the minor part of it. But I've been invited repeatedly to do live debates. I did an hour-long debate against a prominent animal rights activist on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation radio and on a national broadcast that they did. And did a live debate here in the Bay Area in Berkeley to a sold out audience at the David Brower Center. And I've done this quite often because I've been asked, and I have actually turned down a number of invitations because I don't think it's the most constructive format, actually. Yeah. But what I have found is the vitriol is astonishing. I think a case can be made for a healthy vegan diet. I don't think it's an optimal human diet, but I think a case can be made for it. But what's really troubling about so much of the vegan advocacy is it takes almost a sort of a religious or cult-like kind of fervor to it. And if you dare to question it, you know, you are the worst kind of, you know, you're committing the worst kind of blasphemy. And people who have have been vegan for a while and then have stopped being vegan and have explained why they're not doing it anymore have been subjected to kind of some of the most fervent hatred. And because I've been a vegetarian for a very, very long time, I'm sort of in that same camp from the perspective of a lot of vegan and animal rights activists in that I, quote unquote, you know, I'm kind of a traitor and should never be speaking positively about, you know, animal-based food. So, yeah, I've been on a lot of the receiving end of that. And to me, it reveals there is a kind of an irrationality to a lot of this. And unfortunately, that's part of what fueled this report. It was actually the whole initiative, this Eat Lancet report, was largely funded by a vegan couple, European-based vegan couple that have, you know, millions of dollars. And, you know, there were some sort of amusing articles that were written about them after this report came out, showing them, their Instagram feed shows them vacationing all over the world and posting pictures of themselves, meditating and so forth. And they're
with a pretty high carbon footprint, you know.
Jet setting all over the world and telling the, you know, the ordinary person that they should be eating, you know, about a strawberry sized piece of red meat per day and no more, you know, actually preferably none. There is some very strange underpinnings to this whole, this report specifically, but this whole public question and the way it's being talked about. And one of the frustrations I have as someone who's worked very specifically on the, you know, sustainable meat question for two decades now is that we're so much of it just misses the point about what does truly sustainable regenerative agriculture actually look like? And isn't that what we should be trying to move toward? And there's this beautiful, you know, harmony between that kind of agriculture and the food that it produces and healthy diets. But that's not where so much of this public conversation is. So much of it is just about, meat is bad, plant is good. So let's cut out the meat. And really just talking about it in the most simplistic and just really actually almost nonsensical way.
Well, it seems to me that they're conflating two issues, and really there are two propositions here, and we're going to examine them momentarily. But one proposition, and really it's a debatable proposition, is that animal protein is the cause of many of the degenerative diseases that we experience in the West, that it causes heart disease, that it increases the risk of cancer and inflammatory disorders and so on. That's debatable science. But what they're saying essentially is, well, you know, whether or not we have this right, there still is a moral imperative to undertake low animal protein diets because there's an environmental concern. And that too, you know, according to what you just introduced to us, is a debatable proposition, is that, okay, let's say we eradicate animal husbandry and we go to feed the population of the world with the vegetarian foods. Will it really prevent the ravages to our environment? Will it slow global warming, climate change? Really, those are two propositions that we're conflating, right?
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point. It's almost as though there's a growing recognition among the sort of anti-meat and, you know, anti, you know, animal fat, sort of contingent out there, there's a growing recognition that there's a big, there are more and more holes in their case. And so it's as though the environmental argument is being introduced mm-hmm. as a way to sort of supplement yep. it and say, well, yep. even if it's not really, the science isn't really that solid on the health side, we've got the environmental argument. So we should right. still head in this direction. But the truth is, you know, I had the great honor just a few weeks ago of chairing a panel of three really, in my view, sort of leading voices in regenerative agriculture at a ecological farming conference in Kentucky, and just a few weeks ago. And there was a great deal of discussion on that panel among the three people that had all written recent books about this. One of them is the farmer Gabe Brown, who's based in North Dakota. And he in particular is so articulate about the essential nature of animals in that truly regenerative mm-hmm. agriculture. And he has an amazing journey that he documents in his book called Dirt to Soil. And it's all about how he kind of took over this farm that had been in his wife's family, actually, and just had been conventionally farmed. So sort of growing the plants that a lot of, you know, these advocates are telling us we should all be eating more of, that are, you know, like soy and corn and wheat. And basically the soil had become dead. And there was little to no life in this whole area where the farming was taking place, because conventional crop production is one of the worst ecological, you know, things you can do with land, because not only does it cause soil erosion and it's devastating to wildlife and it causes a lot of water pollution, but the bottom line is that you essentially kill the life of the soil, that microscopic life, the microorganisms, mm-hmm. as well as all the insects and, you know, the smaller creatures that are not necessarily microscopic, but all of the little, you know, earthworms and dung beetles and all the other things that are in the soil that make it a teeming, vibrant micro ecosystem. And what Gabe Brown it talks about and shows in his book is that when he began reintroducing diversity to the farm, and especially began reintroducing animals, that's when the life really returned to the soil. And then the food they were producing began to hold a great deal more carbon in it. It began to hold more water in the soil. It began to produce a great deal more diversity in the vegetation that was coming from it. And he actually found that the more animals that he introduced on his farm, the more success he was having in terms of being a truly regenerative farmer and really bringing life back to this plot of land that he was farming. So, and this has been a 30-year journey that he documents in his book. But this is the kind of discussion that is really exciting to me that's taking place in agriculture, and this idea that you can really farm in a way that you're not just sustaining whatever environmental conditions exist there, but you can actually regenerate this. But I have not, and I've been networking with and reading the books from and speaking with people around the world that are working on this idea of regenerative agriculture, and not one of them believes you need to get rid of animals. In fact, most of them think more animals are needed. So it, to me, the frustration I have with this kind of Eat Lancet report and the like is that I think it's a huge distraction from, you know, really educating people and having a sort of a robust discussion about what we really need to do to move the food system in the right direction from an environmental standpoint.
Well, Nicolette, you know, one of the interesting things about this debate is that the term cow fart has been introduced into polite conversation, and it's part of the debate mm-hmm. because they believe that animal eructations or flatulence contribute to the methane accumulation that will create a greenhouse effect, and ultimately the planet will warm up. And if we could just simply, you know, grow plants with photosynthesize and don't emit methane gases will be okay. I mean, so how real is that argument? Can we dispel that concern?
Yeah, well, again, there's always a seed of truth in all of these ideas, but it's just a massive oversimplification. So cattle do in their digestive process, that, you know, they have these actually miraculous digestive systems. Mm-hmm. They
like
have
five stomachs, yeah.
Digestive. Yes, they have this multiple chambered digestive system, which allows them, because it has this sort of long process, and it's all done in conjunction with a huge population of microorganisms that inhabit their digestive chambers. And it enables the animal to actually turn cellulosic vegetation, basically grass, which is inedible to most animals and to humans. And they are able to turn it into nutritious food, which powers their bodies. And then their bodies by humans are used for meat and milk. And this very simple but complex process that they do is quite unique in nature. The ruminant has this unique ecological niche that it fills. And the vast majority of the wild ruminants, you know, which there were once, you know, many, many millions of them on the globe, though they have unfortunately mostly been eradicated by humans or mm-hmm. have disappeared because of the change in climate that's taken place over millions of years. And so what we have today is we have the domesticated ruminants as really the only major ruminant populations on the globe. And they are able to inhabit these areas of the earth that cannot be, cannot or should not be farmed, because ecologically it's really not a place that can sustain farming. And so the vast majority of the grazing that takes place on the earth is in these open grassy areas, often cool and windy and places where you really can't grow crops. And the cattle take that low energy vegetation and turn it through their digestive system into nutritious food. Now, in that process of doing that, if any plant matter decomposes, there's a certain amount of methane that is emitted, mm-hmm. and that's why,
like swamp gas.
Yeah, exactly. Swamps and, you know, peat bogs and everything are known to be very high emitters of methane. It's because of that digestive process that's happening as well, you know, through the microorganisms that are breaking it down. The same thing is happening in the cattle digestive system. And basically, you're having an emission. It's actually mostly through the burps, not as much.
Yeah,
through
right.
Farts,
I'd correct people because cow farts just sounds. Yeah. It gets your attention, but it's actually they eructate. They belch.
Really exciting.
Right. They belch. It's,
yeah,
it's more
it's
cow belches.
Through the emission through the mouth.
Yep.
But they are part of a much larger ecosystem that. Some scientists actually argue that there should be no, in fact, I just read an analysis by a Latin American scientist who's looked at this issue extensively and who argued that really no emissions of that type, it doesn't even make any sense to include them in the international inventory,
right.
Because there's a completely different life cycle that happens with those emissions in natural systems, because essentially everything is recycles itself through the system. And there's, for example, one of the elements of that is the microorganisms that inhabit the soil. There are in environments where you have methane emitted, there is also a higher population of microorganisms that actually consume methane. These are called methanotrophs. They mm-hmm. love methane. So they actually consume it. And there's research in Australia that has shown that there's as much consumed by those microorganisms as there is emitted by the cattle. But there are lots of different lines of research and thinking that are taking place on this. But there's a pretty strong consensus among the people that are looking at the ecosystem functions that you really shouldn't treat the cattle emissions at all in the same way that you treat right. fossil fuel emissions. You're actually taking stored carbon from deep under the ground and pulling it up and refining it, and then you're, you know, burning it in an airplane or in a car, and then you're adding it to the atmosphere. So you're actually taking stored carbon from one place and putting it into another place. When you have cattle, there, you know, there's this issue of the microorganisms I just mentioned, but also there's just this whole cycling system that happens, and there's a great deal more carbon storage. There are some really good research out of Michigan State that was completed last year, that they did a number of years of field testing and actually showed that there was so much more carbon stored in the soil in the places where you had well-managed grazing than places where you didn't have any grazing.
It's like a carbon bank.
Actually more than, pardon me?
It's like a carbon bank of sorts.
Yeah, and you actually more than fully offset all of the global gas emissions from the animals.
Nicolette, I've heard it said that even if this is consequential, it doesn't amount to more than 9% of the global warming gases that are produced, because most is produced through transportation and through energy production. And say, like, we completely, cease animal production, that would take 9% of the global warming gases out of the environment at best. And so is this really... are the potential costs to our economy and to our health of eradicating animal consumption, is it merited in terms of a speculative benefit, taking down these global warming gases by a relatively inconsequential amount?
Well, and in the United States, it's even far less, because we have, as a total percentage in the United States, you know, we have a bigger personal footprint in the United States because we drive our cars a lot. We have a lot of, you know, buildings with air conditioners, etc. And so in the U.S., all of the domesticated ruminants together, so this includes, you know, all the cattle, all the goats, all the sheep, all the bison that are being raised for human purposes, all together, that's estimated by the Environmental Protection Agency to equal about 2 to 3% of our global warming gases in the United States. So for the U.S., if you are talking to an American consumer and telling them to cut their beef consumption in order to impact global warming, that's almost kind of an absurd piece of advice, because it really has almost nothing to do with what an American is doing that will have an impact on global warming emissions. You're much better off to ride your bike more. You know, that's going to have a much bigger impact.
Absolutely, and we're not against that. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, we're with Nicolette Hahn-Nyman. She's author of Defending Beef, and we're talking about the recent Eat Lancet report, which calls for drastic curtailment of our animal protein production and consumption to improve our health and to save the environment. Clearly, there's some problems with that reasoning, and we're going to discover more about some of the issues related to this in part two. Be right back.